Welcome to the first podcast in a series produced by the Thoracic Oncology Group of Australasia, or TOGA for short, in this, the first week of Lung Cancer Awareness Month. TOGA is the leading thoracic cancer trials group in Australia and New Zealand. We are a multidisciplinary and patient-centric group of leading clinicians, nurses, allied health professionals, researchers, and patient advocates within the community. We conduct high-quality, clinically relevant research in order to improve outcomes for people with thoracic cancers. My name is Dr. Melissa Moore. I am the Educational Chair of TOGA, and I have a keen interest in treating people with lung cancer. Before we move on to the podcast content, it is worth reminding ourselves of some sobering lung cancer statistics. One Australian dies every hour from lung cancer. In 2020, it is estimated that there will be over 8,000 deaths from lung cancer. Lung cancer is the biggest cancer killer of Australians, although this statistic is thankfully declining. Higher awareness and better treatments have played a role in improved outcomes for people with lung cancer. Some of these treatments have come about due to the identification of driver mutations that can cause some lung cancers. It is my pleasure to introduce Associate Professor Tom John and Professor Ben Solomon, both consultant medical oncologists from the Peter MacCallum Cancer Centre in Victoria. They are both national and international leaders in lung cancer research and treatment. They always share their expertise and time very generously and graciously. In this podcast, they will discuss the latest data in oncogene-driven lung cancer, including EGFR, ALK, ROS1 and RET. They will also discuss new targeted therapies that are redefining survival rates for those with lung cancer and bringing new hope for patients.
Hello and welcome to this TOGA podcast. My colleague and I, Ben Solomon from the Peter Mac, here to discuss oncogene-driven tumours. There's been some recent information about survival statistics for people with lung cancer. Not just in oncogene-driven tumours, but just overall survival data. Ben, can I ask you what you make of these data?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I think we've all had the impression over recent years that novel treatments like targeted therapies and immunotherapy have improved outcomes in lung cancer patients. But recently there were some objective data that were published in the New England Journal. And this was a retrospective analysis from the SEER database, where they showed a reduction in lung cancer mortality from the period of 2013 to 2016. There was a 6.3% reduction in annual incidence adjusted mortality. Which really did seem to be explained by new treatments, and in particular targeted therapies, because much of this time frame predated immunotherapy, which I think, as you will agree, holds promise for potentially even, well, certainly for additional benefits in survival.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the recent data that's coming out from updated survival analysis from some of the immunotherapy trials are incredibly encouraging. You know, over 30% of patients being alive at 5 years with stage four disease, you know, unprecedented. But yeah, certainly the data from the New England, it didn't break down the subsets.
Right? You're right. There were some limitations there. It showed that improvements were seen in non-small cell, but not in small cell. But within non-small cell, for example, they didn't break down squamous versus adenocarcinoma, which would be of interest. But I guess thinking about the factors that might have driven this effect in improving survival, there's an oncogene we've been targeting since it was identified in 2004, the EGF receptor, and there have been some pretty significant improvements in the way we've targeted it over this time, with the development of first generation, second generation, and now third generation inhibitors. And Tom, there was a study of that you were involved with, the FLAURA study of first line osimertinib, which showed pretty significant benefits with osimertinib, but I was particularly interested in the recent survival analysis that you and your co-authors published this year, actually.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Ben. The FLAURA data are somewhat unique from the TKI perspective in that no other TKI study has shown an overall survival advantage. In this study, the median overall survival was 38.6 months for patients treated with osimertinib upfront, compared to 31.8 months if you received your standard TKI, the gefitinib or erlotinib. And I think what that really speaks to is to qualify for the next therapy after first-gen TKI. You needed to be T790M positive to get osimertinib. And although 65% of patients did receive subsequent therapies, it really does show you that if you go in with your best agent up front, you really impact overall survival. And it is, as I said, one of the first times that we've seen that. And this, of course, has led to osimertinib being used earlier on. And another trial called the ADORA study was recently released at ASCO. This is an early analysis, unplanned analysis of osimertinib compared to placebo following patients who had had surgery with or without adjuvant chemotherapy. And, the hazard ratio for patients who received osimertinib was, a very, very strong signal. The hazard ratio as the primary endpoint of disease-free survival was 0.17, something that we don't tend to see in lung cancer trials. We've had updates at ESMO. The paper has since been published in New England.
By the way, congratulations, Tom, on your second New England publication for the year.
Thank you, Ben. It actually has been an absolute pleasure to be part of these studies, because the impact on overall survival is why we do this, and it's quite heartening to see that impact in the FLAURA study, and of course the ADORA study. It's very early in the piece to know how that is going to trend.
Right, because we've got disease-free survival, but overall survival is immature.
Yes, exactly, and we're not going to know that for some time. The study was that patients received osimertinib for 3 years, and the study has read out at the 22-month mark. So it's still going to be some time before we know about overall survival. But one of the interesting things, I guess, is that if you look at the patterns of relapse in the placebo arm, there does seem to be higher rates of CNS progression. This may, change what we traditionally view as the endpoint of overall survival, and might make people think about using disease-free survival as a reasonable endpoint, given that once people do develop CNS metastases, it can be quite a devastating illness. Another oncogene-driven tumour that does have a predilection for CNS metastases is ALK-positive lung cancer, and that's an area, Ben, that you have been a star and one of the leading lights in. So it's great to be able to pick your brains on this. Do you think that the process used for ADORA would also work in ALK-positive lung cancer?
Yeah, I think so, Tom. And I think just sort of finishing up on ADORA, I think for the points that you made about the huge effect on disease-free survival and the impact on brain mets, I'd be very surprised if it doesn't translate to an effect on overall survival. And I think that there are pretty significant parallels that we see in ALK rearranged lung cancer. We've got newer and more effective newer generation ALK inhibitors, drugs such as alectinib and brigatinib, and most recently lorlatinib, which are more potent ALK inhibitors and are better at working in the CNS. And the strategy explored in the ADORA study is currently being explored with alectinib in a study called called ALENA, where alectinib is used as an adjuvant treatment. And there are actually some pretty, the sort of degree of parallels follows with treatment in the metastatic setting. So this year we got an update of the ALEX study. So the ALEX study, as you recollect, randomized patients with newly diagnosed ALK rearranged lung cancer to alectinib or to crizotinib. And the study was strongly positive with an updated hazard ratio of about 0.43, I think it was. But the remarkable thing from the update was that the median progression-free survival was 34 months with alectinib, which is a stunning figure. And the survival, the median survival hasn't been reached with 5 years of follow-up. The over 60% of patients on the alectinib arm were still alive at 5 years, which to me, just as is the case with EGFR inhibitors, shows that these drugs really are altering the natural history of these diseases.
It's an extraordinary survival improvement compared to what we've seen with the first generation ALK TKIs. I guess, and you know, I should really congratulate you for your presentation at ESMO recently in the presidential symposium discussing another ALK inhibitor, lorlatinib. Where do you see this fitting in?
Yeah, so the lorlatinib data showed that it was super effective as a first-line agent, a hazard ratio of 0.28. Median progression-free survival hasn't been reached yet, and really effective in treating and preventing brain metastases. So, I think you use the phrase, using the best drugs first. So I think it's fantastic that we're developing these newer and more effective drugs. And I think the pace of progress is really rapid, and it's fantastic to have these super efficient, super effective drugs available for patients.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see how much greater this benefit is. And of course, we're probably not going to have a direct comparison between lorlatinib and alectinib, so it is really going to be extrapolation, but extraordinary results. Do you think we'll see a similar thing with ROS1 positive tumours?
I think we already are, Tom. And I was involved in the study with crizotinib, which is the first in class ROS inhibitor, and the crizotinib was highly effective with a response rate of 72%, median progression free survival of 19 months, and actually an updated median overall survival of 51.4 months. But crizotinib has limitations. Tumors develop resistance, and progression in the brain is a problem. And Tom, you were involved in a study with a newer generation compound, entrectinib, which was effective in this population, and particularly effective in the brain, right, compared to crizotinib.
Yeah, that's true. So entrectinib is a potent ROS1 inhibitor. It was designed to cross the blood-brain barrier. It also inhibits other targets such as NTRK and also ALK. And yes, we did show with entrectinib that it has very good CNS activity. We've recently updated some of those data, not just for ROS1, but also for NTRK, just showing that the CNS penetration really does bear out with not only CNS responses, but also what we think is a CNS protective effect, which I presume is a similar thing with using lorlatinib. In terms of development of CNS mets in people who haven't had CNS de novo, Do you feel lorlatinib is also a CNS protector?
I do, and I think as we're seeing improved survival, we need to think about quality of life and symptoms that patients have to deal with. And we all know that progression in the brain is a devastating event for patients. It impacts on things. It has a huge effect on quality of life, including things like ability to drive and much more significant effects on morbidity and even mortality. So having brain effective drugs is very important. Now, Tom.
So I guess. Oh, sorry. I was going to say. So we've sliced the pie of oncogene driven tumors quite fine, but the one that we so far have not been able to target has been KRAS up until more recently. What are your feelings on those?
Yeah, so KRAS mutations are probably around, depending on this population, but certainly in the Australian population, around 20-25% of adenocarcinomas. And about half of them have this particular mutation called G12C. And for the first time, we're seeing a new class of drugs that can target G12C. And the first of these is a drug called AMG-510, which now has a name. Sotorasib is its name. And we've heard early results. There was a response rate of 32% and a median progression-free survival of 6.3 months. So a little bit lower than what we've sort of become accustomed to with some of the other targeted therapies, but I think really promising data. And there are a whole bunch of other G12C inhibitors which are in development, which I hope will improve on these figures. And
there's a newer one which I noticed people have been tweeting about recently, the comment has been it's good to have competition, and I think that's exactly right. The more agents we have, hopefully we'll find the agent that has the best efficacy and the most limited amount of toxicity as well.
Tom, there are a whole bunch of newer targets that I think we should talk about. Two which I'd like to get your thoughts on. The group of mutations, the exon 20 mutations, which we get both in EGFR and also in HER2. What sort of advance? These have been traditionally very difficult to target, but we've seen some really promising new data with compounds to target these mutations, right?
Yeah, we have. It's another extraordinary development in terms of oncogene-driven tumors. These patients actually tend to be very similar to they tend to fit a very similar phenotype to activating EGFR mutant lung cancer. So they also tend to be female non-smokers and generally younger age. And to date, we haven't had an agent or any agents that targets this particular subset of lung cancers. But more recently, at ESMO and at ASCO, we've heard of several different compounds that target the exon 20 insertions, and they can occur in both EGFR exon 20 or HER2 exon 20. Now, it's really important to note that some exon 20 insertions are actually activating, so it's very important that they can still respond to standard TKIs. For the other common exon 20 insertion tumours, there are several classes of drugs now that look impressive. There's a drug which I'm sure you've heard of called poziotinib. There's another drug which was presented at ESMO, which is a bispecific EGFR and MET antibody. called amivantamab, and that was used in combination with a third generation EGFR TKI. There's another drug called patritumab deruxtecan, which is a HER3 directed. Yeah, it's a bit of a tongue twister, yeah. That one. But that's a HER3 targeting agent, which has activity. And what we're seeing with all of these drugs, and lastly, there's another drug that I should mention because it was founded in Auckland, a drug called taloxetinib, which also targets EGFR exon 20 insertions. And all of these agents actually do look like they have efficacy. It's again, like some of the other oncogene-driven tumours, where some definitely look better than others. There's some toxicities that we need to be mindful of, particularly, poziotinib seems to be a little bit more toxic than some of the other agents to date. The monoclonal antibody appears to be different again. There's another drug called TAC-788 or mobocertinib, which again also inhibits the same receptor. So I think this is an exciting time. There is a last compound that we're actually trialing at the Peter Mac is an agent. It doesn't actually have a name yet, but it's a compound manufactured by Dizal. And again, all of these agents appear to have efficacy, and it's just a matter of trying to balance out the efficacy with toxicities. So hopefully with this many agents, one of them is going to come forward as a winner. It's interesting because all of these sort of slices of the oncogene pie are getting smaller and smaller, and one of those, I guess, is RET. And congratulations to you, Ben, on another New England Journal of Medicine paper using a novel RET inhibitor. Now, interestingly, the RET inhibitors seem to be less toxic than some of the other compounds, like the EGFR exon 20 insertion inhibitors. I don't know why that is, but presumably it's something to do with target and off-target effects.
So we were involved with the phase one study of a drug called LOXO-292, which is now called selpercatinib. And I guess one of the key features of this drug and a very similar drug called pralsetinib or BLU-677 is that they were designed to be very specific RET inhibitors. Now, there are a bunch of other drugs like cabozantinib and vandetinib that inhibit RET, but they were what we call dirty compounds. They inhibit multiple other targets, including VEGF. And that really does seem to contribute to the toxicity. So these drugs are quite a bit more potent, and they're tolerated much better, though not without toxicity. So things like altered liver function tests, a dry mouth is a common side effect with selpercatinib, and even hypertension. So these drugs are not without toxicities, but certainly better tolerated than the earlier compounds. And RET fusions do seem to be very sensitive to treatment with a RET-specific inhibitor. And in the phase one study, an objective response rate of 64% was reported with a 17.5-month duration of response and a significant CNS activity. And a phase three first-line study comparing it to chemotherapy has been started, which it's a shame we have to do such a study with the drugs that are this effective. But I think a challenge that we have with all these compounds is how to get these drugs to patients. And we need the drugs to be approved. We need the drugs to be reimbursed.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's the path, isn't it, that we have to follow to get the drug reimbursed. And certainly, selpercatinib looks as effective from a response rate perspective as many of the other targeted therapies. So where do you think things are going, just lastly, from a testing perspective? What do you think we need to test for oncogene-wise?
Yeah, so I think it's clear that we need to test broadly, Tom. I think we started off by talking about EGFR, ALK and ROS, and I think that's really just where it starts now. We've talked about a whole bunch of oncogenic targets which have drugs that are available or that for which there are trials that patients can be directed to. So I think, as I'm sure you'd agree, that speaks to the value of testing broadly. And Tom, I think this means moving beyond single gene testing to thinking about panels and next generation sequencing, which I think will be important to do and important for maximizing not only turnaround time, but also efficient utilization of clinical samples. And I might just plug a study that TOGA are planning to start at the beginning of next year, which is using exactly this approach in newly diagnosed patients to test broadly using next generation sequencing and to select targeted therapies based on the testing. And this is a study called Aspiration, hopefully coming to a center near you next year.
And the beauty of Aspiration is it's matched to actual therapies. So if you do find one of these rare targets, there are therapeutic options as part of the study. Is that right?
So that's right. So there are matched trials, and the number of matched trials is growing. But it'll also be possible to direct people to other trials that are outside Aspiration as well. So Tom, we've covered a lot of ground in the podcast, but I have to raise something, Tom. So it's come to my attention that among your many talents, you really are a very accomplished musician, and I think we might have had a little bit of a taste of your fantastic musical talents in the intro to this podcast. Can you tell us about your latest project, Tom?
Thanks, Ben. Look, it's I think oncology is a field where having a side project is actually a really good thing. It's good to have other things to focus on. It can be a challenging role. I know you, for example, run marathons, Ben. I think that having other things on the side is are certainly really important. And music has been that for me. I think it's a great side project, and I've been fortunate to be able to use it therapeutically for myself, and hopefully with this single coming out, I can share that with the broader community, and particularly the TOGA community. And I look forward to hearing what everyone thinks.
Thanks, Tom. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and I've been privileged to have a sneak preview of Tom's single, and it's amazing. And Tom, it's been a joy to chat with you this afternoon, and thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. It's been a pleasure. I always learn talking to you, and I hope the audience does too.
Thank you to Tom and Ben for a fantastic discussion on oncogene-driven lung cancers. Insightful as always. And Tom, looking forward to the single. Our podcast series is available on the TOGA website, thoraciconcology.org.au, and the Science to Life website at sciencetolife.com.au, or where you listen to your podcasts. I encourage you to join TOGA through the website to keep updated on the latest in lung cancer research. Lastly, thank you to Takeda Oncology for sponsoring this podcast through an educational grant.